The Autobiography of Martin Luther King, J.R. I. Early Years and Awakening. I was born in Atlanta, Georgia on January 15, 1929, into a world deeply divided by race. My father was a minister at Ebenezer Baptist Church, and my mother a loving, gentle soul who instilled in me a sense of self-worth despite the segregation that surrounded us. Growing up in the Jim Crow South, I witnessed firsthand the injustices of racial discrimination. As a child, I struggled to understand why I couldn't play with my white friend anymore, why we had to sit at the back of the bus, or why we couldn't eat at certain restaurants. These experiences planted the seeds of my future activism. I remember vividly the day my white playmate told me we couldn't be friends anymore because his father said so. It was then that I began to question the system of segregation. My parents tried to shield us from the harshest realities of racism, but they also taught us to stand up for our rights. My father, in particular, was a strong influence. I saw him stand up to a police officer who called him boy, insisting on being addressed as Mr. King. His courage in the face of injustice left an indelible mark on me. Education and spiritual growth. As I grew older, my quest for knowledge and understanding deepened. I entered Morehouse College at the age of 15, eager to learn and expand my horizons. It was there that I first encountered the ideas of Henry David Thoreau and his essay on civil disobedience. These concepts would later form the foundation of my nonviolent resistance philosophy. My spiritual journey took me to Crozer Theological Seminary, where I delved deeper into religious studies and philosophy. I wrestled with questions of faith and social justice, seeking to reconcile my Christian beliefs with the realities of racial oppression. It was during this time that I discovered the works of Mahatma Gandhi and his philosophy of nonviolent resistance. At Boston University, where I pursued my doctoral studies, I further refined my thinking on social ethics and the role of the church in addressing societal issues. I became convinced that love and nonviolence were not just religious ideals, but powerful tools for social change. The Montgomery Bus Boycott and the Birth of a Movement. In 1954, I accepted a position as pastor of the Dexter Avenue Baptist Church in Montgomery, Alabama. Little did I know that this decision would thrust me into the heart of the civil rights movement. On December 1, 1955, Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat to a white passenger on a Montgomery bus, sparking what would become the Montgomery Bus Boycott. As the newly elected president of the Montgomery Improvement Association, I found myself leading a movement that would last 381 days. It was a challenging time, filled with threats, violence, and personal sacrifice. But it was also a time of great hope and solidarity within the Black community. During the boycott, I honed my skills as a leader and orator. I learned the power of collective action and the importance of maintaining dignity in the face of oppression. The success of the Montgomery bus boycott demonstrated that nonviolent resistance could be an effective tool against segregation. Expanding the struggle. The victory in Montgomery was just the beginning. We formed the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, SCLC, to coordinate civil rights activities across the South. Our goal was to challenge segregation through nonviolent direct action. In the years that followed, we organized sit-ins, freedom rides, and voter registration drives. Each campaign brought new challenges and dangers, but also new allies and supporters. The Children's Crusade in Birmingham, where young people faced fire hoses and police dogs, shocked the nation's conscience and helped pave the way for the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Throughout these struggles, I held firm to the principle of nonviolence. It wasn't always easy. There were times when I questioned whether love could truly overcome hate, whether nonviolence could defeat the entrenched system of segregation. But time and again, I saw the power of this approach to touch hearts and change minds. The March on Washington and Beyond. The March on Washington in 1963 was a pivotal moment in our struggle. Standing before a crowd of 250,000 people, I shared my dream of a nation where all people would be judged not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. It was a vision of hope and unity that resonated far beyond the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. But the struggle was far from over. We faced continued resistance and violence. The bombing of the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, which killed four young girls, was a stark reminder of the hatred we were up against. Yet we persevered, pushing for voting rights and economic justice. The Selma to Montgomery March in 1965 brought national attention to the issue of voting rights. Despite brutal attacks by state troopers, we marched on, eventually securing the passage of the Voting Rights Act. It was a hard-won victory, but one that demonstrated the power of persistent, nonviolent action. VI, Reflections and Legacy. As I look back on my life and the movement I've been privileged to lead, I'm filled with both hope and concern for the future. We've made significant progress in dismantling legal segregation, but the dream of true equality remains unfulfilled. Economic injustice, poverty, and systemic racism continue to plague our society. I've come to see that the struggle for civil rights is part of a larger struggle for human rights and dignity. The principles of nonviolence and love that guided our movement are not just tactics for social change, but essential values for creating a just and peaceful world. To those who would carry on this work, I say, stay true to the principles of nonviolence. Love your enemies, for it is through love that we will ultimately transform our society. Remember that the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. As I face the challenges ahead, I remain hopeful. I've seen too much change, too much progress to despair. I believe in the inherent goodness of humanity and the power of ordinary people to do extraordinary things when they stand together for justice. The road ahead may be difficult, but I have faith that we will overcome. For as long as there is injustice in this world, there will be those who stand up against it. And in that struggle, we will find our truest selves and our highest calling as human beings.